Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your guest host, Rachel Cassandra. If you listen to Alaska News Nightly or Alaska Morning News, you may know me as a health and wellness reporter. I'm a journalist here at Alaska Public Media, and I report statewide news stories on health and mental health. Today, we'll be talking about peer support for people who are entering recovery from mental illness or substance use disorders. In November, Alaska Public aired my news story on the topic, and I think the best way to introduce you to it is just to play the story. Afterwards, I'll be joined by the two experts I interviewed, so we can get a little deeper on the topic. Here's Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove introducing the story.
For people experiencing addiction, taking the first steps toward recovery can feel daunting or sometimes impossible. Often, it's helpful to talk to people who have been through it themselves. That can help someone's chances of starting and staying in recovery. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more on peer-to-peer care in the state.
Josh Engel is bundled up on one of the first really cold days in October. He walks along a forest path to do outreach in a homeless encampment in Anchorage. He approaches a man in a weathered coat.
How long have you been out here on the streets?
Too long.
Yeah?
Several tents and makeshift structures lean together.
You connected with any resources?
Engel is a manager and peer support specialist at True North Recovery in Wasilla. And one of his aims today is to help guide people into recovery. It's a path Engel knows well because he's in long-term recovery himself. Now, he supports people in ways that go well beyond what a more traditional therapist or psychiatrist can do. He may text with clients outside business hours, help them find work or get connected with benefits, anything that supports them in a way that might lead to recovery.
I personally really enjoy being able to connect with them on like a personal level of someone that has walked their path and been in their shoes and ultimately have struggled the way that they're currently struggling.
True North Recovery, where Engel works, aims to employ those with lived experience in recovery for every role, from receptionists to healthcare providers. When patients interact with workers with lived experience, research shows it can aid recovery. And peer supports can help people recover from both serious mental illness and substance use disorders and can reduce healthcare costs. And peers can sometimes say and see things those without lived experience can't. Aaron Surma is executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, in Juneau, which runs training for peer support. And Surma experiences mental illness himself. He says psychiatrists and mental health professionals play an important role in supporting recovery and treatment. But there is a strong power difference.
You're in a small room, you're making intense eye contact, and the dynamic is that you have the expert and the person who needs help. And the experts are taught to not really share about themselves, right? Which makes it feel really one-sided. It makes you feel like you're being judged and evaluated.
Surma says he was arrested multiple times during high school and was court-ordered to go to Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous meetings. He says hearing peers in those groups was awesome, but things felt different when talking with his formal providers.
When I was a teenager, I was lighting stuff on fire and buying garbage bags of weed. So then to go into a small room and talk to somebody who, imagine the counselor from South Park who's saying drugs are bad, okay? And it's a million miles from what you know.
He says it's easier for peers to bridge those gaps in early recovery. Peer support specialists speak the language of addiction and mental illness and also understand the more traditional language of behavioral health professionals. He says typically those professionals dole out care in ways that are convenient for the healthcare system. But peer support is different.
Recovery isn't just supported in small doses from paid professionals, but it can also happen on our own time, in places that are comfortable to us, in settings that feel more accessible and from people who feel more approachable.
He says peer support relationships don't have to be formal, and the role can be incredibly healing for the person providing the support. The hard times and challenges someone has faced suddenly have value if those experiences help someone else. That's something peer support specialist Engel has felt deeply in his work.
There is no way you could have convinced me 10 years ago that all of the damage and chaos that I was causing in people's lives, my loved ones, you know, people I just would cross paths with, that I would be able to use any of that for good. I thought that was just going to be like a stain on my soul for the rest of my life.
Instead, now his struggles are a tool to help people and do his job. Back at the Anchorage encampment, he approaches...
Knock, knock.
...a couple's tent.
It's going to be tough.
They express interest in detox, but want to get into a program together.
But what we can do is we can line it up so, like, beds on the same day, they're just going to be different programs.
On this day, it's not enough.
I swear, every single time we talk, almost there, almost there. I know you are, but...
But he's in touch with them, and he'll be back working to make their next steps in recovery as easy as possible when they're ready. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra. You're listening to Line One, your health connection, and you just heard a news story I produced late last year on peer support. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by the two experts in the story. Josh Engel is a manager and peer support specialist at True North Recovery in Wasilla. Josh, thank you for joining.
Hi, thank you so much.
And calling in from Juneau is Aaron Surma. He's executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, in Juneau. One thing he does there is to train Alaskans for peer support roles. Thanks for being with us, Aaron.
Yeah, happy to be here.
And a note, this is a pre-recorded show, so you won't be able to call in or email your questions, but I'm so glad you're listening. So we learned a lot about peer support from that story. Josh, what else do we need to know?
I think that was a phenomenal story on peer support and the importance of it. I do believe that the peer work being done in this state is definitely laying some of the groundwork and changing our approach to the kind of the behavioral health field within the state of Alaska. And I think it's really making an impact within communities as well.
Great. Thanks. Aaron, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think I'd just like to also add that there's a lot of ways for people to get involved in peer work. And so there's a lot of avenues to be a part of it. I think that having a sense of purpose is an awesome part of recovery. Josh illustrated that really well in the article that you wrote, and that's accessible for a lot of folks. So I really want to make that clear. And I think we're going to talk about that more in a minute.
Yes, we will definitely get into that. So Josh, can you talk a little about how you got into your job?
For me personally, I was on the other side of peer support to begin with. I was very unfamiliar and not educated on what a peer role looked like. And so my first experience with peer support was actually being like a recipient of it. I'm a graduate of True North Recovery, and so I went through our outpatient program and was in our sober living. And I got to work with peers on a daily basis. And I think that was like my biggest attraction to it is I tried for many years to kind of like shift my life around and get sober and become the person I always wanted to be, and peer support definitely was, I personally believe it was like the key component that had been missing for so many years, because it was like nothing I'd really ever experienced, to being able to work with somebody like on a daily basis that had walked in my shoes, that didn't really take a whole bunch of explanation of what I was feeling or going through, and could relate on like a personal level. It was a shift for me in all of that.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, and we'll get a little into kind of what that relationship feels like a little later in the show.
Absolutely.
And Aaron, can you talk about your role at NAMI and how you got there?
Sure. I'm the executive director of NAMI Juneau, and we're a small organization. There's 7 of us, and a few of us are part-time. And we do a lot of stuff outside of treatment that relates to mental health and substance use recovery. So we do presentations, do a lot of work in the schools here in Juneau, teach different classes, table at public events, help people navigate mental health services, and maybe most relevantly to this conversation, teach a class that helps people get certified as peer support specialists. And my role in that is to use my experience in my own recovery from mental illness to dispense advice and explain how things work, and also to teach the class where people learn how to be a peer support specialist and get that state certification.
Okay, thank you. Great. And yeah, one of the reasons why I'm excited to talk to both of you for this show is you, each of you have been on both sides of that peer relationship. Josh, you just talked about that a little bit. And so can you talk a little bit more about what it felt like when you got support from peers? You said you'd tried kind of changing things in your life and it, you hadn't been able to turn that corner, but.
Yeah, so for me, the what it felt like was I was watching in real time, the watching somebody that had made the decisions and taken the steps to like start to change their life, and I got to experience it on a daily basis of what that looked like. And so it provided me hope, and it provided me, you know, inspiration and motivation to continue, I mean, what I had set out to do many times in my life and then ultimately fell short or wasn't done learning, or however you want to put it. And so I interacted with individuals daily. I mean, True North is a peer-led organization, so our individuals that work within our organization all the way up to our executive leadership are all people in long-term recovery. And so I got to have conversations and spend time with guys and women that had made the changes. And so, yeah, it gave me hope that I could do this and that I was working towards somebody or working towards something, and that I could have purpose within my life and not just work a dead end job and be where I had been for so many years.
Great. Thank you so much. And Aaron, can you talk a little bit about what it was like to be on the receiving end of peer care?
Yeah, absolutely. Peer care has been an important part for me for a long time. The first time I was in high school, got arrested, had to go to outpatient treatment, and there was a therapist, and there was also a peer support specialist there. So the peer support specialist was a little bit more of an approachable person than the therapist, easier to talk to, more about relating to one another. And also I was in group therapy and learning from the other people in the group. So they were like literally my peers. You know, some of them were younger than me, some were older than me. They were all there to receive treatment, but hearing them talk was awesome for me to start putting words to my experience. Because really at that time, I didn't have any kind of language to talk about how I felt or what was going on with myself. I didn't really think I had any problems. I thought the world was kind of a dumb place. Like hearing people like put words to how I felt and then describe no longer feeling that way, I was like, oh, maybe I could feel different than how I feel now. So at least that started me on a path of understanding what was going on with myself and that there was a way to experience the world differently than how I was experiencing it.
Thank you. And Aaron, I know you're a big advocate of informal support systems, especially. Can you talk about what those are?
Yeah. So like parents do this all the time, right? Parents at a playground are going to talk about which second grade teacher is the best for their kid and what they recommend for playing sports in middle school and everything else. Parents are always peer supporting one another all the time, even though it's not called peer support, but just lending advice, experience, so that you can relate, so you can learn some stuff. It's all going on all the time. And mental health is no different. There are people like Josh who their job is called peer support specialist, or like that's at least like in the job description. And there's plenty of people walking around the world who are just chatting with their friends and loved ones and sharing their experience in recovery, talking about what worked, what didn't. Sometimes that's in a planned place like Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and all kinds of other support groups. And sometimes it's just while out and about existing in the world. So if you're chatting with someone while you're buying groceries, and you're commiserating about having a crummy time about something, that is peer support. Inviting a friend over to talk because you really want their advice because you're going through a particularly hard time, that's peer support. And going to a place where you don't necessarily have to pay money, but it is a planned event like Alcoholics Anonymous, with the idea of figuring out how to both support your own recovery and support someone else's recovery. All examples of less formal peer supports. And I think that that's an area of mental health and substance use recovery that's easy to grow once people feel confident doing so.
Okay, great. Thanks. And aside from peer support specialists and the informal roles you talked about, are there other kinds of peer support we have in Alaska?
I think that like anybody, any kind of professor is providing peer support in a sense, a little bit more formal, but someone learned how to teach English class than teaching other people English. That is a form of peer support. I think it's a little bit more formal. But yeah, I think in a lot of the helping services, there are different examples of peer support. But as far as I know, mental health and substance use is the only one where there's an explicit name for it and certificate saying that your lived experience in recovery is the thing that makes you uniquely qualified to do the thing. So as far as I'm aware of, the mental health substance use version of peer support is kind of the most, trying to come up with a less obnoxious word, but like pure version of it, where it's just your lived experience. That's the only thing you need. And pure is it a little bit of an obnoxious word to use there. I wish I had a better one.
Okay, great. Thanks for explaining that. And so we know peer support specialists can't fill every role for people in recovery. Josh, can you talk about when they can help people and what they can't do?
I think peer support could potentially fill every role. I think some of the roles that you would look in you know, entire organizations would be very focused on certain things. We have like a pretty robust medical team within our organization. Some of them have lived experience, some of them do not. I think for me too, any education is possible, you know? And so, I mean, I talk about it with my team all the time is my education that qualifies me to do my role. I don't wish that education on anybody. And I think that's part of it, is that I went through many, you know, tribulations and trials in my life to become, you know, like Aaron was just talking about, it become uniquely qualified to do my job. And I can go to school and I can learn and I can be able to do all of those things. But so I would always challenge the what peers technically can and can't do, because yeah, we're pretty phenomenal people.
Yeah, sorry. What I meant with that was peer support specialists specifically. I know, yeah, True North Recovery, it's you all prioritize hiring people that could be described as peers in every role, right? And yeah, it just depends on education. For peer support specialists, are there things that you think about that they can and can't do?
For me, I think a lot of like the can't do is I like to stay myself, and I encourage my team to really stay within their role. And I think it can kind of we fall into some gray areas sometimes, and it's tough working within like an organization that provides the amount of peer support we do, because obviously we do what we do because we love it. But you know, like we are professionals, and there are, you know, I don't know if you necessarily would say like ethical things, but you have to protect your own recovery, if any of that makes sense, or if that's answering the question, and just being mindful of all of that, because I think the impact peers can have on somebody's life is greater than a lot, than people really understand. And it's simply because, like what I was talking about with my experience of on the other side of it, is just me showing up to somebody and kind of sharing a little bit of like my story and my experience has an impact that you can't have without the lived experience. And so I don't know if that answered the question, but
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then in our next section, we'll talk a little bit about what it's like working with individuals. But right now we need to head into our first break. Thank you both so much. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. This is a pre-recorded show, so you can't call in or share your questions, but I'm glad you're listening. After this short break, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of peer-to-peer relationships. What is it like to give and get care from peers? Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Rachel Cassandra. Joining me today is Josh Engel. He's a manager and peer support specialist at True North Recovery. And also with me is Aaron Surma. He's executive director of NAMI Juno and trains people in peer support. We're talking about peer support roles in Alaska for those starting and in recovery from mental illness or substance use disorders. And we're getting into learning more about what it's like to work with a peer support specialist and what it's like to be one. Josh, can you talk about becoming a peer support specialist? How did you start and what was it like when you entered that role?
So how I started with the peer support role is I actually completed treatment and was offered a job from there. And like I talked about earlier, I had experienced peer support for about a year and was familiar with what the role kind of looked like. And from there is really like how I got into it. I started as a residential peer. We had just opened up a residential facility. And so I started as one of the floor staff. And that role was a little different than what I was used to. That lasted for a little less than a year. And then I transitioned to an outpatient role. And then over time, I found myself in the crisis world doing outreach. And so that was my start. Like my start was honestly about 3 months for me being in treatment. And when I started making the comments of I want to do that because it was impactful, you know. And I always wanted to do something. And I love help. I've always loved helping other people. And I slowly started to find purpose in the terrible choices I'd made for many, many years. And so for me, there was nothing better than to take the negative and turn it into good.
Thank you. And yeah, can you kind of walk us through like now when you are starting an individual peer support relationship with someone, how do you start with them? Like, what are the kinds of things you're figuring out with them?
With my role now, that changes so much. But I think with any peer role, I personally really lean into just walking alongside them. You know, I try to help them identify what they believe and think is going to improve their quality of life, try to help them understand maybe how they got to where they're at, and then just, you know, trying to use my knowledge and experience of working in this field and just in life in general of what steps you could take. I tell people all the time, it's not my job to fix anything. It's not my job to tell you what to do. Like a big part of my job is to help you understand and know your options and then support you in making an educated decision in all of that. And so I think when it comes to behavioral health and this, the world of, you know, substance use treatment or mental health services, it's scary and there's a lot of unknowns. And I think that is one of the things that is a barrier for a lot of people because it's, hey, call this number and you need to ask this, this, and this, and, you know, get connected to these people. And I mean, that's a lot for somebody that's, you know, struggling with mental health or, you know, struggling with substance use. Of some of those individuals are just trying to figure out what to eat for the day. And it's not realistic to just put it on. So I really take the approach of just trying to meet people where they're at and just get the, I love asking people where they're from and, you know, what brought you to Alaska, and being very like person centered and just humanizing it is a big piece of it as well.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, it sounds like part of that is building some trust and rapport with people. Are there other things you do to kind of earn someone's trust when they're in this vulnerable state?
I mean, nothing that necessarily like sticks out. My entire life, I enjoy talking to people. You know, I got a absolutely amazing mother and father, and you know, I grew up handing out food to, you know, homeless people, and you know, like someone that's standing on the corner and kind of just, you know, just talking to them. And I think that we forget some of these individuals that we see sometimes, you know, they're just a human, you know, and I think that approach just naturally builds trust, you know, of not necessarily like trying to fix everything for them, but just of like, what's going on? You know, I mean, one thing that is has been very eye-opening over the last year, and that with the outreach work that True North is doing, is a lot of these individuals are okay being outside, you know, and so, okay, that's fine with me. Like, I'm not the one to tell you to go inside, but how do we improve this? Like, it looks like you got a bad cut on your arm. Like, how do we make sure you can get to the hospital? And just taking that of like approach of support instead of wanting to fix, I think that just naturally invite somebody in as like an equal, and like all of that just builds the trust and builds the rapport to continue to engage with somebody.
Thanks. And yeah, I'm wondering, you know, you're saying you walk alongside someone and you can't fix things for them. Are there things you do just to take care of yourself, or try and get yourself in the mindset of, you know, knowing you can't fix things for someone else?
That is such a fantastic question, and I think it is a common theme in the world of just behavioral health in general, of like self-care. And I am blessed to have an amazing wife and three young children that keep me very busy and maybe distracted from some of that. So I probably don't practice my self-care as much as I preach self-care, but yeah, I also think my approach to a lot of it too is, you know, I mean, it just was said to me this morning, somebody asked me the question of like, how many people's lives do you think you've saved? And like, my answer is always the same. Like, I have never saved anybody's life, not working. I mean, I think in general, but as far as work goes, I don't save lives. Like, I help people save their own lives is really what it is. And I'm a big advocate for knowledge is power, and part of like what I bring to the table when engaging with clients or just individuals is the knowledge of the field and like what steps to take, whether you want to get enrolled in services, whether you want to figure out shelter or permanent housing or, you know, food resources. Like, I have that knowledge, and that's really what I bring. And so, I mean, ultimately they make the decision to accept it or to run with it, and like they save their own lives. And so like, I think with that approach comes like a peace with the struggles, I guess you would say, that come in this field, because I'm not that powerful is really what it is.
Thank you for sharing that. And Aaron, can you talk a little bit? You've talked about having powerful experiences, you know, receiving care or support or hearing stories from peers. Can you talk about what that's been like for you?
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, like I mentioned earlier, just being able to put words to my experience. You know, like, you can't fix a problem if you don't know what's wrong, or if you don't even know like that something is wrong. And so I think that was like the first and most powerful thing, going to group treatment, going to AA meetings when I was in high school and hearing people describe their lives. I was able to start putting words to my experience also. And I don't think it like really took hold for me till a lot later. Like, there was still like a ton of hard stuff that happened after that, but that at least planted some seeds of kind of like self-narration about what my life has been like, what's happened. So that was like foundational, you know, going to a meeting and some dude that I thought looked cool as anything saying, yeah, man, I have this hard thing go on and this is what I figured out and this is what I'm trying to do now. It's like, I didn't think about my life that way whatsoever. And so even just conceptualizing that you could feel differently than you feel and experience the world differently than you feel is such a gigantic revelation if that doesn't feel like an option to you. And I think I hear Josh talking, and I'll bet you people he works with have different versions of that experience with him, but that would be the exact thing that I would be looking for from him if he was the person supporting me. And I'll bet you that he can share some of his experience and I would be able to get some of that. That's good feelings and that kind of like kick in the butt to figure out what I need and what I can do from him. Some very specific examples. I had a coworker, Larry Fricks, who passed away this past year, and he developed a couple different like evidence-based, like they were studied, peer support things for people with mental illness. So his was called WHAM, Whole Health Action Management, WHAM. And it was a 8-week course, and you make recovery goals and you talk about them as a group. And that kind of thing is just so practical, and I think really illustrates the value to me. You know, like if I sat down right now and you told me to make a recovery goal for myself, and I'd never thought about that kind of thing before, I'd be staring at a blank piece of paper for a long time. But sitting with a group of other people with some kind of similar experience to me, talking about like, you know, I want to start exercising. I think exercise would feel really good, and maybe I can get a gym membership and I can go walk on a treadmill twice a week. Or people who say that they want to start doing something creative and they want to buy a guitar or paint or whatever else it is. Just general life stuff, like filling out a life. That is what recovery is. It's a big piece of it. And it's hard to like, A, know that that's recovery and know how you fit into the idea of doing recovery things. So Larry Fricks was a person, just hearing him speak so clearly about what is valuable about peer support and that anybody can benefit from it was like foundational for me. I was very lucky to work with him for multiple years, and just his like clarity, sense of purpose, and just like bluntness. You know, there's something very freeing about somebody's being very blunt about their experience as opposed to wrapping it up in a lot of professional sounding jargon. And it makes it a lot easier to put your guard down. And that was my experience with Larry. So he was one very pivotal person for me. And I think as far as me supporting other people, this happens often where someone will call us and they have a family member who's having a hard time. And often the person calling or coming into our office will want that person to do something very specific. So like, let's say it's a spouse that's drinking a lot. The person will say, like, how do I convince my spouse to go to rehab? I know that they need rehab. And I tell my experience of, you know, my experience isn't from sobriety from alcohol, but I can still talk about like being hospitalized for mental illness, coming out of it, and trying to piece together a recovery plan. And like inpatient treatment wasn't a big part of it for me. I had to slowly figure out what was important, what was relevant, what felt good. And sometimes it was mental health stuff, and sometimes it was just life stuff. And it was kind of a grab bag of those things that I've gotten better at doing over time. And me sharing that experience with folks kind of gets them off of this fixation on one thing being the solution for their loved one, and instead being a little bit more open-minded to a lot of different types of things, being supportive of that person, for that person to get whatever help they want to receive in the world. So I think I can share, you know, some anecdotes for a couple minutes, And when that conversation goes really well, it expands the mind of the person I'm talking to consider a lot of different things to be a part of recovery.
Thank you. And yeah, you have both talked with me about how therapeutic it can be to offer support as a peer, and how it can kind of transform how you think about your own, you know, recovery and journey. Aaron, can you talk a little bit about how that process has been transformative for you, of being able to turn around and offer support to others?
Oh, it's amazing. Having a sense of purpose in life is incredible. I was ashamed of the fact that I had, like it was past tense, mental illness in my past, right? Like, I didn't tell anybody about any of that. I hid it. And to have that seen as a strength and something that uniquely makes me qualified to help other people is very freeing. And so I think when I was speaking earlier about my coworker Larry and just how confidently he spoke, I saw how freeing that was for him. And I now get a piece of that by doing things like this conversation. So thank you, Rachel. I get the freedom and I get a sense of purpose. And I think those two things are foundational to me. I think I would be in a much worse mental place if I felt like I had no role in the world. And that's something I felt for a long time. Like a lot of other things, I didn't realize that was lacking. I had to slowly figure it out. And I had to slowly figure out what the solution to that was. And I've been fortunate to be able to do that and to actually make it a part of my work.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Josh, is there anything you want to share about kind of how it's been transformative to turn around and offer support for people?
Yeah, I think it's just, I think it's just, I mean, Aaron had talked about it earlier. It's just like any other peer role, you know, or like, I love the analogy of, you know, a parent talking to another parent at the park, you know, or it's, you know, I always talk about, you know, law enforcement officers or anybody in the emergency response field, vets, you know, somebody that's been in combat, PTSD, anything like that. And you're always, in my experience, you're always going to be more comfortable speaking to somebody that has experienced that, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I remember there was one day, I think it was last summer, and we work a lot with the HOPE team, which is, it's a part of APD, and it's their homeless outreach and like prevention team.
Anchorage Police Department,
yep, APD. Anchorage Police Department. And I remember there was an individual, and he was in a tent, and he had made the comment to the HOPE team of, he was like, you have no idea what I'm going through. And I'm standing right there, and I got to be like, I do, you know, and instantly it just, his guard was down a little bit, not all the way, but it just opens up that door. And so I think that being able to do this work and on a daily basis use, you know, like I had said in that original story of like, I thought these were going to be like stains on my soul, you know, like I thought these were going to be things that I had to work through for the rest of my life to forgive myself, and I get to on a daily basis use them for good. It just has, it has continued to allow me to like forgive myself and to move forward and, you know, be present and not let it can like drag me down in a sense. And I think that's the power of peer support.
Thank you. And one last question before we cut to our next break. In the news story at the top of the show, we heard you having a conversation, giving a little bit, not tough love, but like pushing back a little bit. Do you feel like you have more permission to do that as a peer?
That, for me, that's hard to answer. I don't know if more position or like permission to do that, because I've never been in the other seat as far as like you know, a mental health provider or a therapist, or I think if I was ever any of those, I would still have a peer, like I would still feel like a peer if I had experienced what they're experiencing. But I think it's a little more maybe like accepted in a peer role. And, but I also think transparency and bluntness, for lack of a better way of saying it, is it can be therapeutic as well, you know? I know some of like my greatest successes, if that's what you want to call them, or, you know, some of my greatest moments over the last, you know, 5 years of working in this field has come in the form of those conversations, of being just very direct with somebody. The hard truth that, you know, especially with the population that I work with, it's you either start to make changes or you end up dead or you end up in jail, and life does not go great, you know, and I've lost a good amount of individuals that I've worked with, because maybe those conversations weren't had or they did not hear them. I think in the other roles, like, it's not the traditional way. And I think there's some fear in having those hard, direct conversations. And yeah, I think it is maybe a little more accepted and just part of the norm when it comes to peer support.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And we need to head into our next quick break. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. This is a pre-recorded show, so you can't call in or share your questions, but thank you so much for listening. After this short break, we'll get into peer-to-peer support and how it fits into the larger healthcare system. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Rachel Cassandra. Joining me today is Josh Engel, a manager and peer support specialist at True North Recovery, and Aaron Surma, executive director of NAMI Juno, and he also trains Alaskans for peer support roles. We're talking about peer support in Alaska, giving help to those entering and in recovery from mental illness and substance use disorders. So let's get into how peer support fits into larger systems in the state, the healthcare system, and the system of care and support for substance use and mental illness. So first, is there any research out there on peer support, Aaron? Like, does it work? Do we know yet?
Yeah, and so there's all kinds of research on it. And I think maybe the quickest answer is that it's a Medicaid billable service. So the federal government has definitely decided that it works. And that's why it's a Medicaid billable service. And you can look on the National Institute for Mental Health. You can search through their database of research, and there's all kinds of articles talking about the efficacy of peer support to keep people engaged in recovery. And I think there's also a lot of research about people leaving recovery during transitions in care. So like maybe someone's hospitalized and then they're transitioning to outpatient treatment, or vice versa, in outpatient treatment and going to residential care, 24-hour care. And people get lost often in transitions. And peer support, like one of the stated purposes of it, is to engage people, make programs accessible, so that people engage with the thing, the program, for the duration of time that the program is intended to take to provide benefit to the person. So both peer support services themselves, like I mentioned Whole Health Action Management earlier, WAM, that's evidence-based, it's been studied to pieces. Other peer supports, like what Josh provides, individual one-on-one interactions, have been studied. And also it's like the long-term relationship with peers is intended, among other things, to keep people engaged in support services, and that's been shown to be true as well. The longer you're engaged in treatment, the longer you're giving yourself a chance for that treatment to be effective for you. So yeah, plenty of research.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I'll ask you another question. So I was recently reporting on opioid overdose deaths, and we lost fewer Alaskans in 2024 than in 2023, 5% fewer. And in the state's report, they point to ways the state has strengthened care for substance use disorders, and that includes expanding the peer support workforce through training and certification programs So Aaron, can you talk a little about those certification programs?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got trained, I think, 5 years ago by Jen Galvin. I feel like her name needs to come up in a conversation about peer support in Alaska. She developed the curriculum that we use and that a lot of folks have engaged with as they're trained. So the training that Jen developed and that we use is 40 hours of classroom training. And I always boil it down to, you learn about how recovery can look for different people. And you learn about how your own experience in recovery can be used to support other people's recovery. So when does it make sense for me to share a tidbit from my life if I'm supporting Josh or somebody else? When does it make sense for me to just be a buddy and commiserate? You know, how do I use my experience to relate to someone else while they're on their own recovery path? This class, you know, it's a class you learn at it, and you also get certified as a peer support specialist, which means that you can provide peer support services. And if it's in a setting that bills Medicaid, they're billable. There's a lot of other settings like reentry. So we have a few reentry houses in Juneau, people who are coming out of incarceration, and they're staffed by peer support specialists. And there are a lot of other folks who are using their lived experience in roles other than something called peer support specialists who are also promoting recovery out and about in the community. So there's people who have taken this class or not, who are using their own experience in recovery to support people while they're working at the front desk of a health clinic or as a residential manager or as a substance use treatment counselor. And that's another thing that our state has developed is CDC, Certified or Chemical Dependency Counselor. And there's a lot of folks who are getting their CDC certification so that they can do some outpatient and inpatient substance use treatment services. And although lived experience isn't an explicit part of that, it is certainly that a path that people are taking to support recovery. And that is another avenue that our state has really focused on in the past few years. And as a result, there's a lot more people provide support services in our state.
Thank you. That's good to know about the that other certification. And so who is eligible to take these peer training classes?
So for us, we kind of stated as anyone who says that they're in recovery from substance use or mental illness counts, and they can use their experience. I don't really want to make it a suffering pageant where you have to prove that you've had a certain amount of hardship. I don't know how we would ever prove that. It seems like a weird concept, so we just avoid it. So if someone says that they're in recovery from substance use or mental illness and they want to use that experience, they're welcome to come to our class. And we've had people come to our class who have been out of jail for like a few weeks and they come to it, or you know, they've just got to inpatient rehab a few weeks ago and they come to it. And there's other people who've been, you know, in AA and sober for 30 years who have sponsored hundreds of people, but they still want to learn more. So in my mind, anyone who thinks that they're in recovery, who says that they're in recovery, is in recovery and can use that experience. I think that other folks might give you a different answer, and that there's a certain amount of time in recovery that might make sense. And I think that might be true for specific jobs or specific settings, but I think that it always makes sense for anyone to engage in their own recovery. I'd also like to say that there is certification available for people who have supported someone else's recovery. So like a parent whose kid really struggled with mental illness can also become a peer support specialist. And we're hoping to develop a class specifically for that audience this fall. I've been talking with some folks. Maybe I shouldn't say yet because it's not official, but we're hoping to develop a class like that. And I think that there might be other folks in the state who have a class for people to be certified peer support specialists because they have supported someone else's recovery.
Thank you. And you've talked about how conventional behavior, I don't know if that's the right phrase, conventional behavioral health roles or non-peer health roles offer care that can be convenient to the healthcare system. So can you explain what you mean by that and how peer support can be different?
Yeah, so we have limited funding and limited people providing treatments. Like, I can't go see a psychiatrist for 3 hours this month, unless I'm super rich and spend a whole lot of time trying to find a psychiatrist with that kind of time. But that's really not realistic. And same with therapists. Like, you know, a standard amount of time with a therapist is 1 hour per week. If you're in an intensive outpatient program, you might see someone more. But there's also just a dearth of therapists. So even if you, again, are super rich, you might not be able to find a therapist to engage in that amount of time. And so when I'm talking about convenient for the healthcare system, I'm really talking about just like the realities of how many people are in these positions and what insurance and our federal government are willing to pay for them. And I think the beautiful thing about peer support, both in treatment and outside of treatment, typically has fewer restrictions on the amount of time of engagement. So if I'm in AA and I'm sponsoring someone, if I've got 5 hours this week to spend with them, I can spend 5 hours this week. There's no insurance complication. There's no external forces getting in the way of the interaction being whatever we want it to be, whatever we think is going to be helpful. And so I think those informal supports are always great because they are not as constricted by requirements imposed on systems that we're working within.
Great, thank you. And Josh, do you have anything to add about how you see peer support specialists kind of creating a different kind of system?
I think Aaron really nails it on the head, is the amount of time a peer can spend with a client or an individual is, it's not comparable to any other role. And so, I'm a huge advocate for, you know, peer-led organizations and that foundation when it comes to like a treatment program being based around a peer program, and allowing, I think, you know, counselors and therapists and all is extremely important, you wouldn't want to take that away, but I think having the foundation around peer support and then supplementing, you know, the other pieces into it, it really creates this wraparound care, and trying to reduce some of those gaps that kind of come to that like traditional model when it comes to substance use treatment, instead of, you know, like I go to this building for this set number of hours throughout the week, and then just left to my own devices for the rest of the week. Like, you supplement all the other time, and you know, and that's all peer support, you know, you're intentional with it, and it gets you connected to the recovery community and starts giving you purpose, and it helps you, you know, navigate the things that either you forgot or were never taught or you never learned how to do in life. And so, and that's really, I think the success that we have seen in the state of Alaska when it comes to organizations that are very peer heavy in that sense, they kind of speak for themselves.
Thank you. And yeah, you can talk about maybe what it's like at True North, but do our peer support specialists, they're like collaborating with other providers in that system?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we at True North, they have their clinical meetings. Like, it's a very collaborative piece. You're working within, like, the peer supports are part of the treatment team. And so, I mean, you're working with case managers and clinicians and the counselors, and everybody is in the know of everything, you know, and as well as, like, you know, the counselors and case managers are also leaning on the peers for feedback and, you know, and with the ultimate goal of providing the best care possible. You know, I mean, it's a big thing. It's been preached to me since the very beginning, is like quality of care. And so if you're a counselor and you're meeting with somebody 1 hour a week and then you don't really know what's going on the rest of the week, it's tough, you know, to continue to make progress. And so when you have this very robust team that works together very well and communicates, and everybody's in the loop with the same goal of helping this individual improve their quality of life and stay on the right track and accomplish the goals that they have set, you just increase success.
Thanks to our guests, Josh Engel and Aaron Surma. A reminder of some resources. If you're in mental health crisis, you can call 988. And if you want to be connected to resources, you can call 211. Thank you so much to our audio engineer, Crystal Hyde, and our producer, Annie Fite. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Tell us your thoughts or suggestions by emailing line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your guest host, Rachel Cassandra. Thank you.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.